Okay, let's try and unpack this. You ever look at one of these complex systems, like say a DeFi protocol, a new digital economy thing, and you kind of know it does cool stuff, but figuring out the engine, how people actually, participate, how they earn or maybe steer the ship a bit.
Oh yeah, that feeling, it's common. It keeps a lot of people on the sidelines, I think.
Yeah.
All these terms get thrown around here, VNFTs, liquidity pools, emissions,
Yeah.
and figuring out how it all meshes together, how you can actually engage with it. Well, that takes a closer look.
And that's exactly what we're doing today. We're taking a deep dive into Goblins Cash V2. Specifically, we're focusing on this mechanism they call locks and how they work with these voting epochs. We've got this article, Locks and Their Role in Voting Epochs, as our guide.
Right. We're going to pull out the key stuff from that source, figure out what these locks really are, how they give people power, how that power translates to rewards, and importantly, how it all connects to the different ways liquidity works in Goblins Cash V2. The goal is for you to leave with a really clear picture of this particular engine.
Yeah, because understanding this stuff, it's not just definitions, is it? It's about seeing the underlying strategy, the incentives, maybe even the game theory behind how it's designed. It's understanding how locking your tokens actually plugs you into the governance and maybe the earnings.
So let's just jump right in. According to the source material, what are locks in this Goblins Cash context?
Well, at its core, it seems a lock is really about commitment. The source says it's when you take specific tokens, GOB tokens in this case, and you commit them, you lock them up inside the protocol for a certain amount of time.
And it's not just like a number in a database.
Yeah.
When you do that, you get something back, right? This unique digital thing, VNFT. That's vote escrowed non-fungible token. So your GOB is escrowed, held by the system, and this NFT you get that represents that specific lock. It's yours, unique, with the details amount time.
Okay. So I lock my GOB, I get a VNFT. What's the point of locking up my tokens instead of just holding them?
Right. The main driver is getting influence and earning potential inside the protocol. Locking tokens is basically your ticket to participate, especially in governance votes. And, crucially, it's how you become eligible for a slice of the protocol's revenue. You know, the fees from swaps and maybe a share of new tokens being issued, the emissions.
Ah, okay. So the lock is like the key. It unlocks a voice and a potential income stream from the protocol itself.
Exactly. You're turning kind of passive tokens into an active position, one that can generate yield and give you influence, all wrapped up in that VNFT.
Now you said influence, a voice. How strong is that voice? Is everyone who locks tokens equal? Or.
No, not at all. And this is really key, according to the source. Your voting power, they often call it VGOB power, isn't just based on how much GOB you lock. It's actually a combo deal. It depends on both the amount and how long you commit to locking it for.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Locking, say, a smaller amount for a really long time could potentially give you more voting power than locking a much bigger amount for just a week or two.
So the protocol is deliberately encouraging longer-term thinking, longer commitment.
Precisely, yeah. Longer locks signal more confidence in the protocol's future,
Yes.
basically. And they get rewarded with, like, disproportionately more voting power. It's all about aligning incentives for the long haul.
Okay, right. So I've locked my tokens, got my VNFT. I understand my voting power comes from amount and time. What do I actually do with this power? Where does the voting happen?
This is where it gets really interesting, tying into the economics.
Yeah.
Your voting power lets you participate in these regular voting periods, epochs, they call them. And in Goblins Cash V2, the source says you use this power to essentially direct where new token emissions go. You vote on which specific liquidity pools within the protocol should get these bonus tokens.
Got it. So the people who lock tokens, the VNFT holders, they're deciding where the protocol distributes its new tokens and what's in it for them. Why vote?
Well, as a voter, your rewards are directly linked to the pools you support. You get two main things. First, a share of the trading fees that get generated in the pools you help send emissions to.
Yeah.
And second, you also get a cut of the actual token emissions that went to those pools because of votes like yours.
Okay. That's pretty direct incentive to vote wisely then. You want to pick pools that are actually getting used, generating fees, and receiving emissions.
It creates this kind of feedback loop, right? Voters want to send emissions to active fee-generating pools because that boosts their own rewards, which in turn should attract more liquidity to those pools, making the whole exchange work better.
The source also dropped a term, boosties. What's that about? Can you elaborate a bit?
Yeah, boosties. The source mentions it as another potential perk of having a lock. It didn't go super deep, but the basic idea seems to be that your VNFT, your lock, your voting power, might also be used to increase or boost the rewards you earn if you're also providing liquidity yourself in the pools.
Oh, I see.
So locking isn't just about earning from voting. It could potentially magnify your earnings from being a liquidity provider too. It sort of links your governance stake with your operational participation.
Right. That adds another strategic layer. If I'm already providing liquidity, now I've got another reason to lock tokens to boost those specific rewards.
Exactly. It encourages people to get involved in different parts of the protocol, not just one.
Okay, so we've covered locks, VNFTs, voting power, directing emissions. Let's ground this now in Goblins Cash V2 itself. What about the pools? Where does all this liquidity actually live and work?
Right. So Goblins Cash V2, fundamentally, it's a DEX, a decentralized exchange. Its main job is letting users swap tokens securely, hopefully with low fees, and this is crucial, with low slippage.
Slippage, yeah, that's the bane of traders, isn't it? When the price you thought you were getting slips away before the trade actually goes through, usually because the market moved or there wasn't enough depth.
Precisely. High slippage just eats away at your trade value. Goblins Cash V2 tries to minimize this by being, well, smart about it. The source mentions it uses a router to find the best paths across different pools, and it uses something called time-weighted average prices, TWAs, to help prevent price manipulation and keep things fair.
And of course, the best way to fight slippage anywhere is just having deep liquidity, right? More assets in the pool means any single trade has less impact on the price.
Absolutely, that's fundamental. And Goblins Cash V2 supports this by handling different kinds of assets and offering pool types that are optimized for them.
The source made a point of distinguishing between token types.
It did. It talks about correlated tokens. These are assets you expect to trade pretty closely together in price. Think stablecoins, right? USDC, DII, those are the classic examples. Then there are uncorrelated tokens assets where the prices aren't expected to stick together, like the protocol's own GOB token versus, say, BTC or something volatile.
And the pools are designed differently based on which type of token they hold.
Yep. Exactly. Tailored design. So you have stable pools built for those correlated stable price assets. The source hints at the math behind it, like XA plus YSK, which is basically designed to keep the price ratio super stable and minimize slippage for pairs that should be almost one-to-one. Perfect for stablecoin swaps.
What sense? Optimized for low volatility.
Right. Then you have volatile pools. These use a more, let's say, traditional approach, like the standard XEYOK formula, better suited for those uncorrelated pairs where you expect the price ratio to swing around a lot more.
And then the third type mentioned, concentrated liquidity pools, or CL pools. These sound a bit more advanced for the liquidity providers.
They definitely are. CL pools are a big evolution. They let liquidity providers, LPs, put their capital to work only within a specific price range that they choose, instead of their money covering all possible prices from zero to infinity, which is how older pools work.
So wait, instead of my liquidity being available, if GOB hits $1 or $1,000, I can say, look, I only want my USDC GOB liquidity used if the price is between $5 and $10.
Precisely that. Your capital gets concentrated in that range. The source mentions ticks. These are like the tiny price steps that define the edges of these ranges, the big advantage. If the price stays in your chosen range, your capital is way more efficient. It can earn significantly more fees because it's focused where the action is.
What if the price leaves my range? Say, GOB goes to $12.
Ah, that's the trade-off. If the price moves outside your set range in a CL pool, your liquidity basically goes dormant. It's not being used for trades anymore, so you stop earning fees from swaps until the price comes back into your zone. It definitely adds a layer of active management for LPs. You got to pick your ranges carefully and maybe adjust them.
The source also noted that CL pool symbols can hint at what they are, and importantly, that the fees in these CL pools can be flexible, adjustable. That seems significant.
It really is.
Yeah.
Unlike older pools often having fixed fees, CL pools can allow for variable fees. This means the fee could potentially be adjusted, maybe based on volatility, maybe based on volume in that specific pool. It's another tool for optimizing things, attracting liquidity where it's needed.
Okay, so stable, volatile CL pools, users provide liquidity there. How do they actually earn from doing that? What are the rewards?
So providing liquidity, being an LP in any of these pools, gets you a share of the transaction fees from swaps that use your liquidity. That's the baseline. But then, on top of that, remember the emissions directed by the lock holders. Pools that receive those emissions distribute them as extra rewards to the LPs in that specific pool.
Okay, there it is, the connection. The lock holders vote, send emissions to pools. That makes those pools more attractive for LPs to deposit into, which makes trading better for users,
yeah,
generating fees, which then flow back partly to the voters.
You got it. It's designed as this whole interconnected system of incentives, trying to get everyone lockers, LPs, traders working together, kind of indirectly, to make the exchange liquid and efficient.
And the annual percentage rate, the APR, for being an LP, the source mentioned a nuance, especially for these CL pools.
Yeah. For the simpler basic pools, APR is usually calculated kind of straightforwardly. Rewards earned divided by the total value of the liquidity staked. But with concentrated liquidity, because your capital might not always be active, the APR calculation gets a bit more specific. It really focuses on the rewards earned relative to the portion of your liquidity that's currently within the active trading price range.
That makes sense. Your return is based on the capital that's actually doing work at that moment.
Exactly. If your liquidity is sitting outside the current price action, it's not earning swap fees. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't factor into that part of the APR calculation in the same way. It really highlights the need for active management in CL pools.
All right, let's try and tie this all together then. We started with locks and VNFTs, committing tokens, getting voting power based on amount and time.
Right, and using that power in voting epochs to direct token emissions.
Directing them to specific liquidity pools within Goblins Cash V2, whether they're the stable ones, the volatile ones, or these more complex concentrated liquidity pools.
Yeah. Where users, liquidity providers, deposit their assets to earn trading fees and those emissions that the voters directed.
And potentially boosting those LP rewards further if they also have a locked position, a VNFT, through those boosties.
It's a whole system. You've got participants with long-term stakes, the lockers, directly influencing the economics for the participants, providing the core function, the liquidity.
So this deep dive, using the source material as our map, hopefully gives you, the listener, a much clearer picture of how these core parts work together. You're not just hearing VNFT or CL pool as isolated jargon anymore.
Hopefully, yeah. You can see how locking GOB makes you a shaper of the system, how voting drives rewards, how different pool types try to optimize trading, and how providing liquidity, especially with CL, becomes this strategic game of positioning.
And understanding how these pieces connect, it does raise some really interesting questions about how people might behave, doesn't it? The source pointed out the flexible fees in CL pools, the voter-directed emissions, the need for LPs to pick ranges.
Yeah, that combination, it creates a pretty complex strategic landscape, I think.
It really does. I mean, think about it. How might LPs choose their price ranges in those CL pools? Are they looking at trading volume? Or are they trying to guess where the lockholders, the voters, are going to send the emissions next week?
And flipping that, how might the lockholders vote? Could they coordinate?
Yes.
Maybe focus emissions on specific CL pools with certain fee tiers, especially if they themselves have liquidity concentrated in those same ranges, getting boosted.
It seems like these design choices, the vote escrow power, the directed emissions, flexible fees, concentrated liquidity, they aren't just technical details. They really set up this economic arena, where the strategic choices everyone makes directly influence how the system evolves and who benefits most. What kinds of strategies do you think might emerge from that kind of interplay?